Getting you home quicker. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover. Cambridge 105.
Time now to speak to my guest, the explorer Justin Miles. Justin, hello. Welcome back to 105.
Hi, thanks very much for having me back. Good to be here.
Good to see you. The last time we met was, I think, last November. I was doing Sunday breakfast and you came in because you were just setting off on a trek to the Arctic. But I gather things didn't go exactly according to plan.
No, you could say that. It's we left for the coast of Greenland to head towards the North Pole in winter, and we hadn't got very far when I was taken down by really bad pain, and a phone call back to Magpass doctors here, and a field examination sort of stripped off to the waist in minus 35, revealed that I'd split my abs from my chest all the way down to my belly button.
Ow.
And it had herniated.
That's one of those things that just sounds sort of painful, just a brief description like that.
Yeah, it wasn't very nice. It was a hernia, in effect, so I had to fly back for surgery to have bionic bits fitted.
So how easy is it to get back? Because presumably you map everything out and there's an emergency route, I guess, which you have all set up. But of course, if emergencies happen, you're never entirely sure where exactly you're going to be.
No, we were very, very lucky in that we weren't very far out at all. So we turned around and headed back for the coast.
Okay.
And got somebody to come up along the coast with the vehicle and pick us up.
And it was the local Magpass that you were in touch with here?
Yeah, local Magpass back here. So from 2,500 miles away, Dr. Rob McKenzie from Magpass sort of spoke to me and my expedition partner on the phone and talked him through a field diagnosis. And at that point, Alex looked up at me and said, "Oh, I can get my fingers inside you and there are bits poking out." And Rod said, "You need to come home."
So you had a colleague who was responsible for, poking about on behalf of Magpass.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a poke around and found that the insides were coming out.
Oh, dear. But how long did it take to recover?
Well, I got back and was taken in for surgery. The surgery wasn't very pleasant at all. They fitted a mesh inside all the way down through the centre of my abs. And to do that, they had to trim away, make space at the back of my abdominal wall. So recovery was probably felt a lot longer than it was. 6 or 7 weeks before I was up and moving around properly again.
And don't you feel, did you not have any sort of second thoughts about heading back to go and do something else?
No, not at all, not at all. I've got bionic parts now, so I'm even fitter than I was before.
How do you feel? Do you feel, when you sort of feel Van Bio Abs, can you feel that there's something something in there, as it were, that wasn't before?
No, it feels better than before, I guess. But I don't notice any difference at all now.
It's like, I guess for people such as yourself, this sort of thing is almost like an occupational hazard, really. We hear of Sir Ranulph Fiennes, I think, who's lost a couple of toes in his time through frostbite and the like. And it's just, you just carry on and you add it to the collection of stories when you go around and tell them to schools when you return.
Well, exactly. What else are you going to do?
I suppose, but, oh, dear. So the next trip, it's a project, I think, called Polar Bears and Paddleboards. What's that all about?
That's right. Well, Polar Bears and Paddleboards started about 18 months ago. I've been away in the Arctic, and I came back and I was paddleboarding on the River Thames with a friend. Now, paddleboard, if you imagine a surfboard, and you stand up and paddle, and that's about as complicated as you get. And we'd had a couple of glasses of wine, and I said, "Paul, wouldn't it be brilliant to do a proper stand-up paddleboard expedition in the Arctic with icebergs and killer whales and stuff?" And he said yes, and the wine continued to flow. And a couple of days later, not that we were drinking for a couple of days, but a couple of days later, we thought that was a really good idea. And we've pulled together a 10-person team, and we leave early part of the next week, next Monday.
Okay, what's your route this time? How are you going to get there? Do you stick to the same route, or does it vary according to what you have to carry with you?
It'll vary slightly, but we're going across to Greenland. We're going to paddleboard to the face of the world's largest glacier. Along the route, we're going to be recording it for a documentary. The documentary will be used for the schools project that I run. We'll also be looking at some global warming stuff, not from a scientific level, because I don't pay lip service to that, but how the local Inuit experience it, what they think, what they feel on a sort of annual basis.
So getting, if you like, the feelings of the locals, pretty much, on what they've been seeing. And I guess that the Inuit would be the sort of people who are able to pass down from generation to generation the story of the big iceberg or whatever that once came their way.
Up in Karnak last year, Karnak on the very north, most northerly settlement, I think, on Greenland, There's one more further forward. But even at Karnak, they were saying that they've not had the ice consolidation in January that they were getting 5 or 6 years ago, 4 or 5 or 6 years. So there's a definite change. Scientists are measuring it one way. I'm interested to hear the people's stories.
It's interesting because I don't particularly want to get into the whole global warming story because we could be here for several days and probably several bottles of wine were we allowed to have them.
Absolutely.
Into the studio. But the view, you know, these things, weather does sometimes happen in cycles. I remember a couple of weeks ago there was this wonderful story in I think it was the Daily Express, because it usually is when it comes to weather, saying that we're going to be having rain and rain and rain for summers. It could be for the next 10 years, but don't worry, we've already had 4 of them, and look at it, look outside and just feel the temperatures. It's
the rain will be back.
You think it's going to come?
The rain will be back.
How do you, as an explorer who spends a lot of time in the Arctic, how do you feel with the hot weather? Will you tell me you've been to hot places too on other expeditions?
Yeah, I don't just do Arctic. I do sort of jungles, deserts, anywhere at all, really, for the schools project. But the weather's just something that you crack on and work through. You can't change it. So if you want to do something, I never watch a weather report. Just crack on and do it anyway.
I guess you have a reasonable idea of what the weather's going to be, particularly the Arctic, as to what the weather's going to be generally.
I mean, if you turn up sort of up in the high Arctic in a pair of Bermuda shorts, that's not a good idea. And likewise, I wouldn't wear a sort of down jacket on the equator. But just ignore the weather, crack on.
I was down in London last week, and of course the usual announcement comes over the tube advising people that in this inclement weather or hot weather or whatever phrase they use, to carry a bottle of water with them at all times. I just wonder if there's any other bits and pieces which, from your, if you like, the benefit of your exploration and when you visited hot countries, what should people carry around in temperatures of 30 degrees Celsius to be just sensible and everyday stuff?
Just stay hydrated is the most important. Seek out shady areas. Don't go and turn into a lobster in the sun all the time. It doesn't do any favours. Makes people ill.
I guess you pack the sunblock and stuff when you're going to those parts, and presumably the equivalent, maybe even in the Arctic as well, I guess.
Yeah, we can do in the Arctic. I will be this trip because sun's a problem this time. The sun will be up for almost 24 hours a day, so it's always there. And with the glare of the water, even though it's still going to be cold, we've got to be conscious of sunburn.
So the paddleboarding, you mentioned there's slight dangers in the water, potentially lurking. What sort of stuff will you be wearing when you're moving around?
Well, that's going to vary a little bit, depending on the weather from day to day. We're sponsored by Oakley, so we have to have at least a couple of hours on paddleboards around the icebergs in our Oakley board shorts and rash tops. For publicity shots, that could be quite uncomfortable. Other than that, we've got a specially made dry suit so that we can stay warm and dry even if we fall in.
I guess that's, statistically you're going to fall in sooner or later, however much skill and care you use
around
the area.
Probably sooner and often.
How much practice have you done? You mentioned you've been going down to the Thames.
Yeah, I've been down on the Thames. I picked up my new Corban BT board 2 weeks ago. And the first time on the board was the first time that I've been on a paddleboard since last May, I think. So, yeah, the other guys are all paddleboard instructors. They live on the coast, they live on the rivers. They're out all the time. But I've just managed to get back on a board 2 weeks ago.
Thanks very much for coming in to tell us all about this. This will presumably give you lots more material to take to the schools, along with the videos, of course.
Absolutely. The schools project, the Schools Explorer, relaunches this coming September. In a totally new format linked directly to curriculum with loads of subjects, geography, history, literacy, numeracy, you name it, it's in there. And it takes all of my experiences and turns them into lesson plans and activities. And this coming year is going to be fantastic. We've got the polar bears and paddle boards, some smaller trips and challenges around the UK and into Europe, cycle the Somme, and then something much bigger in a hot place next year.
And if there's some schools listening and want to get involved on that, how do they get in touch with you?
Come onto my website, www.justforthechallenge.com, and there's a link on there that will take you straight to the page where you can find out more and sign up.
Okay, well, Justin, thanks again for coming in. Safe travels. Do come back and let us know how you get on at the end of the trip. It'd be really, really good to find out.
Will do. I'll take you along to a documentary screening.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good
thanks
to see
a lot.
You.
Thank you.
It's time now to welcome my guest this afternoon. He's Mike Newling. He farms out of Cambridgeshire, just outside of Wisbeach, and he's the dedicated potato ambassador for East Anglia. Good afternoon, Mike. Thanks for coming in.
Afternoon.
The potato ambassador, how do you get a job like that?
Well, I was sort of... I volunteered to do it. Something came out in the newsletter from the Potato Council asking for local ambassadors.
So the Potato Council were like the marketing body,
yeah, the marketing
for potatoes.
Board, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And advert?
I just went for it, yeah. And
well
I got
done.
Through.
How long since you've been doing it?
I've been doing it a year and a half now.
I guess it's a job you love. You kind of, you see, there was one, wasn't there, not so long ago, the Australian Tourist Board were inviting somebody to go over there and extol the virtues of Australia, like how good they used to be at cricket back in the day. And I guess with potatoes, it's kind of similar, really. I guess, presume you're farming them on the farm?
Yeah, yeah.
What bigger site do you have there? How large is, you know, how,
well,
how many hectares, acres?
Well,
I don't quite know how to describe it.
It's a few hundred acres. We've,
okay.
You know, it's old. We've had it for a long time. And my grandpa, really, he started the whole enterprise. Yeah.
And it's gone from there. I know a guy who I've met as a result of my day job, really, a guy by the name of Peter Lepper. He runs a technology business in Germany. And he was, I wish I could remember the name of the variety, but basically he was missing his favourite potato that he knew as a boy. And because he clearly had more money than sense, he went out, bought a few fields around the town of Down, where he lives, and planted these potatoes. Then, of course, came the problem of what to do with them. So he now makes some very nice potato crisps and also does gin. And that comes from potatoes too, I gather.
Is it gin or vodka?
Well, he describes it as gin. You know, he doesn't... I've tasted some. I've lived to tell the tale. But okay. I'm kind of thinking it's not quite gin, you know, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, potatoes are so versatile. They've got so many uses.
And we've got some local firms around this part, haven't we? Corkers is one which is reasonably local, which does these things.
Yeah, they've done very well.
Is there something which is sort of spreading, do you think? You know, more... what I'm thinking of is that it seems to be able for farmers to diversify now a lot more, and these little regional companies springing up in a way you never really used to see, at least not in recent times.
Well, I think it's something you have to do. You've got to adapt and you've got to diversify, you know, in order to survive and keep the business going.
Yeah. What sort of potatoes? What sort of potatoes do you grow on your farm? It's a good starting point.
Well, they're all destined for the fresh chipping market, so they all go to fish and chip shops all around the country. So the types of varieties are Sagita, Agria, Marquis, Ramos. We used to grow Piper, but they can be troublesome.
Is that Maris Piper?
Maris Piper.
Right.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if the soil around this part of the world is particularly suitable for one sort of potatoes over another, or the direction of potatoes.
Well, I think in the Fens, particularly, well, in East Anglia, we're blessed with some very good land that will grow a wide array of crops.
Mm. And Robert, you had a sort of a question related, because we've been blessed with some pretty warm sunshine recently, and I think you had a question along those lines.
Yeah, I was wondering, it's been... it seems to me unseasonably warm this year, and maybe unseasonably cold in last winter. Has that affected your East Anglia?
Well, yes, it has. I mean, when we started planting, it was very cold. It took a long time for the potatoes to emerge and to grow properly. And then all of a sudden, we've had this recent spell of warm weather, which has been fantastic. But, you know, if you can't irrigate, you don't want your potatoes getting too stressed out. You don't want them to get too warm. But, you know, recent rain has been a good thing.
I was going to say, was it a help or a hindrance, that rain we got last night? I presume we got some up near Wisbeach as well. We've got plenty of it here.
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been a godsend.
Yeah. In supermarkets, I always get confused these days by labelling. It used to be fairly straightforward when you just, you know, picked up the potatoes and away you went. But now it seems to be best for roasting, best for boiling. And so, you know, what's, you know, are consumers that stupid?
Well, I think it's really just to help consumers, or, you know, anybody who's buying in the supermarket, how best to get out of the potato, what is the best way to cook them, what is the right variety to choose, because some varieties do work better than others for particular types. So for example, you've got Maris Piper or King Edwards, which are typically fluffy varieties. They're sort of, when they're cooked, they're fluffy on the inside, so they're better for roasting and they're better for wedges and that sort of thing. But then there's two other types. You've got salad potatoes and you've got smooth. Now, salad are sort of your new potatoes. They're firm to the bite, and they're best when they're boiled, really, or steamed.
Mm.
And then smooth are perfect for mashing. So a variety such as Desire is the one to go for.
For mashing to zero. So that's going to interest Lee, who gave us was in touch a little earlier on. Then Mark fancied, he likes chips with gravy. He says us Southerners...
I don't blame him.
Us Southerners, apparently. You like the gravy with the chips as well?
Yeah, I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say no.
Okay, we should do a quick straw poll here. Robbie, what's your sort of favourite potato format?
Oh, chips from a kebab van at 2 in the morning, maybe with beans on them.
That sounds like an awful waste of potato there. Daniel?
Either mash or wedges are my preferred choice anyway. And I do like a good baked potato as well, as I was saying a moment ago.
I don't mind baked potatoes. I'm a big chip fan, I confess, but Sunday roast potatoes. But I guess there's so many different ways that people can do the roast potatoes. Perhaps if I'm doing them, I'll put some garlic in there with them as well, just to throw in some different flavour. But, you know, how do you do your own at home?
I'm just simple, really. Just boil them for a bit, you know, not for very long, and then just chuck them in the oven, and then let them crisp up. Some people like to go mad with butter. You don't have to, you know. You can just chuck them in.
Mm. Well, where's the best place to buy the potato from? We mentioned supermarkets, but of course there's a lot of farmers' markets around. You can get them, you know, near enough straight out the ground, aren't you, there?
Well, if at all possible, you should always buy local. Always support your local farmers. And supermarkets do support their local farmers, but...
How local are they, though? When you see, sometimes you get a bag of potatoes, you have a pretty picture of the farmer on the side, and you're kind of thinking, these are Lincolnshire potatoes, but how far have they gone before they get down here?
Well, that's the problem, you see. I mean, you've got to do your homework. When you're in a supermarket, if you actually care, which everybody should do, you should look to see where they've come from, and that will usually say local, or, you know, if they've come from abroad, then... You've got the chance to look elsewhere, and you should stay local.
Is there any symbol you should look for? You know, a tractor or something, or
other,
just to indicate it?
Red tractor logo, which means British Assured. It's assured produce.
And that runs right the way across things, or is it just potatoes for that?
It runs right away across vegetables and supermarket produce, yeah.
Okay, that's very useful. You're very useful to know. Well, Mark, absolutely fascinating. Mike, sorry, I'm getting my brain failure. All these baby names going through my head. Mike, thank you very much for coming in. Really interesting. I think, I'm feeling rather hungry now. I think I need to go in search of certainly some chips, maybe a jacket potato as well.
Good. Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you. Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. That's Billy Myers, Kiss the Rain. I guess we're kind of tenuous link, I know. I guess we're kind of hoping for a dry weekend, particularly on Sunday, because it is the London to Cambridge cycle ride. And one of the charities involved in that is Breakthrough Breast Cancer. And I'm pleased to say that's organisation's event and fundraising officer, Elizabeth Martin, is on the line now. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Good to speak to you this afternoon. Where am I calling you? You're in London, I guess.
Yes, I'm in the London office at the moment.
Is it sunny?
It has been, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's always promising, because we kind of sort of get the same weather, just slightly later, so it's always you're always useful to check, you see, when you're up in Cambridge. So the event is on Sunday, and I guess this is a pretty important one for Breakthrough Breast Cancer.
It is, absolutely. It's the biggest event that we have on our calendar. There's over 3,000 cyclists taking part, and it's taking place this Sunday. It's a cycle from North London all the way up to Cambridge, where it finishes on Midsummer Common.
It's about 60 miles, I think, the route altogether, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. 60 miles, which is a great distance. It can either be a challenging distance for someone that hasn't done much cycling, or it can be quite a comfortable distance for someone that cycles regularly. But either way, it's a great distance to complete in one day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember a couple of years ago, I was actually cycling in the opposite direction, which wasn't a good move, as a whole load of cyclists suddenly came towards me. And I had this for about 3 or so miles whilst our routes came together. How many people are taking part?
We've got 3,000 people signed up at the moment, which is fantastic. But there is actually a chance to sign up on the day if anybody would like to come along and join us.
I was going to ask about that. I guess you kind of have to know that you're fit, because that's a long distance if you're not.
Yeah, we recommend that people do have a good level of fitness to take part. But apart from that, all you need is a bike and a helmet, and turn up on the day and enjoy yourself.
And I guess there'll be people along the route offering water and things like that for people who maybe do get a bit hot or sweaty, and maybe, you know, run out of their own supplies. I guess you would do over the course of 60 miles.
Exactly, yeah, we thought about everything like that. We've got 4 rest stops on the day. Most of those are in pubs and also at some local schools, and they'll be providing refreshments, and it's entirely up to the riders how long they spend at each rest stop. So if you do get one and you fancy a 20-minute break, that's no problem at all. It's not a race, it's just a cycle ride that people can take as long as they like to complete.
I was going to say, I guess some people are probably more competitive than others on this and want to really whiz through as fast as they can and get the best time and all that, whilst others are just perfectly happy to cycle along and take in the countryside between London and Cambridge.
Exactly. We do have some people that start at 7 o'clock in the morning and will be finished by just after 10 o'clock, which is incredibly quick. But the majority of people take their time to go at the pace that suits them. We encourage people not to push themselves too far. And we'll be on the common at the finish line until 5 o'clock on Sunday, so people have got all day to complete it.
And are there many of these sorts of events? I know there's one which runs in the opposite direction, but I wonder if there's others around the country between other places.
I think they are becoming more popular, the cycles that start in one city and end in another. There are a few which are more popular than others. I think it depends largely on the distance as well as the appeal of the city. For instance, lots of people in London love the thought of coming out to Cambridge for the day. And also people in Cambridge like the idea of being able to come to London and then cycle home and the achievement that goes with that.
Ever done anything like this yourself?
I once cycled from Guildford to Portsmouth, which is about the same distance, but that did take me about 10 hours.
Right.
If anybody's worried about how long it would take, please don't worry. I still had a great time, and it's a good achievement to have done.
So people can still, as you were saying, take part if they want to. Is there any sign-up fee that's required?
There is, it's £20 to sign up on the day, so it's great if you could bring that with you. It would just be a case of coming along to the start line, which is in Pickett's Lock, North London, any time between 8 and 9:30, and you'll be able to get on your way.
Okay, that's great. Well, look, Elizabeth, really good to speak to you afternoon. I hope it goes really well. I should probably close by asking if there's a website address if people need to find out more about all of this.
Yes, absolutely. You can go on breakthrough.org.uk/cycle, and that's got all the information that you need.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you.
Bye.